Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I gotta tell you, I love digitized newspapers. Just found out the other day that my wife's fourth great-grandfather's death was the result of him falling out of an apple tree in 1881. Yeah, broke a lot of bones and lingered for 5 days. You know, you couldn't find stuff like that a few years ago. Hey, welcome back to Extreme Genes. I am Fisher, your radio root sleuth. The phone number to share your stories, ask questions, leave comments, complain, 1-234-56-GENES. That's 1-234-56-GENES, G-E-N-E-S, as in genetics. We'd love to hear from you anytime. And, of course, you can contact me at fisher@extremegenes.com. Last week, phenomenal show with the recently discovered tape recording of an interview with Ruth Mae Fox in 1957 when she was 103. Hope you caught it. We also counted down stories numbers 10 through 6 in our top family history stories of 2013. And this week we pick that up and count down all the way to number 1. How's my Casey Kasem? Needs work, I know. These are the top stories of 2013. Number 5. Jewish tombstones hidden from the Nazis discovered in Austria. This is a story that wasn't much talked about, but I think it's phenomenal. Back in 1943, word got to the small remaining Jewish community that the Nazis were going to go in and level the tombstones in Vienna's oldest Jewish cemetery. Dates back to the 1500s. With that word, the locals snuck into the cemetery by night and buried every single stone. Obviously of great historical significance, it's believed there were 800 stones hidden and protected in the dirt that night. It was a small cemetery, and recently it was undergoing renovation when the missing stones were discovered. It was the fact that they were found that also revealed the only way they could have ended up where they did, by the protection of local Jews who, at great risk to themselves, thought it worth the potential cost to honor their dead in this way. See pictures of the stones and cemetery on extremegenes.com. Use the keyword Vienna. Story number 4. What DNA told a 1964 kidnapping victim? This was a tough one to take. On April 26, 1964, Paul Fronczak of Chicago disappeared from the hospital in which he was born. At 1 day old, a woman dressed as a nurse took him from his mother's arms, saying the doctor wanted to see him. Witnesses say she took him down a staircase, got in a cab, and was never seen again. After a long, desperate search, the FBI in July 1965 found an abandoned baby at a store in New Jersey. They took him to the Fronczak parents, who emphatically identified him as their missing son. Well, since that could not be proven, they sought custody of the child, who they believed was their own, and eventually adopted him. The happy ending, of course, made headlines. Paul Fronczak grew up in a loving home, but in time came to recognize that he looked nothing like his parents. In July of this year, the college administrator, who now lives in Nevada, announced that he took a DNA test, and the results confirmed his suspicions. He and his parents were not related. This, of course, means that the real Paul Fronczak may still be out there at age 49, not knowing that he actually belonged to a family other than one he may have known all his life. Meanwhile, the man who knows himself as Paul Fronczak has no idea who he himself is. His name, his birth date, his family, how and why he was abandoned, all these questions of his own identity remain for him. His DNA test tied him to a third cousin and indicates he has a mix of European and Jewish ancestry. Since the story first broke, the FBI has reopened the case to some solid leads, and ABC's 2020 is working as well to not only help the Nevada man learn who he is, but also to find the son brought into the world by the Fronczaks of Chicago. The case has not yet been solved. Story number 3. Ellis Island reopens. Yeah, in 2012, Hurricane Sandy swamped Ellis Island, where so many of our ancestors checked in after arriving in New York from their native lands, as well as their immigration museum. The storm also destroyed their air conditioning and electrical systems. This meant most of their artifacts had to be removed. Well, finally, in late October, the main floor, and the stairs to the Great Hall, where doctors may have inspected your ancestors for contagious diseases, reopened on the 127th anniversary of the dedication of the nearby Statue of Liberty. It's costing around $77 million to repair the damage. Many of the artifacts are still safely being held in Maryland, and much of the place won't reopen until the spring, but at least we can see progress. Story number two. Ancestry.com and FamilySearch.org announce a historic joint venture. In early September, it was announced that Ancestry.com and FamilySearch.org had agreed to work together to place 1 billion new records online digitally within 5 years. Ancestry.com is digging into their vault, providing over $60 million in funding, while FamilySearch, owned by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, is opening their vault dug into a granite mountain in Utah that contains millions of microfilms of the records of mankind collected over many decades. FamilySearch will also provide thousands of volunteer hours in getting the records digitized and then available for public consumption. There's never been anything like it attempted before to make available such a large number of documents in such a relatively short period of time. Earlier in the year, the two organizations announced they would work to make available some 140 million American wills and probate records, plus indexes covering the years between 1800 and 1930. That project is expected to take only 3 years. Exciting stuff is happening between these two family history leaders, and hopefully we'll see some more joint projects like these down the line. And that brings us to the number one story of the year, the one that generated the most talk. And in fact, it's really a continuation of a story that began in 2012. Story number one. The battle for the body of King Richard III. Sure, he died over 500 years ago, but when he was found under a British parking lot in 2012 and positively identified through DNA and other methods, a new war began, something of an extension of the War of the Roses. A battle for the body of Sovereign King Richard III. It's all about tourism, of course, but the arguments are cloaked in noble verbiage about what is right and what did the king want. Well, the folks in Leicester, where he was found, want his remains to stay right there. They've even designed a new tomb where the public can pay respects. Pay certainly being the operative word here. Richard's hometown of York wants him too. It's where they say he planned to be buried before his life was cut short. Who knows what will happen and be decided in 2014 concerning this king who continues to make headlines 500 years after his death. So there you have it, our top 10 family history stories of 2013. We hope you have your own top 10 list for your 2013 research. Hey, welcome back. It's Extreme Genes Family History Radio. I am your radio root sleuth Fisher, along with Tom Perry, our preservation authority. Tom, you got some great ideas for the holidays relating to family history, and I love the fact it's so cheap.
Oh, it is. We call them Christmas gifts that give for generations. First, it's fairly simple that anyone can do that takes minimal effort, is pretty inexpensive, and the third best gift you could give for Christmas this season. All you need to do is go to your local bookstore or Amazon online and buy an appropriate book for all of your children, your grandchildren. Usually they're aimed for kids under eight, but you can kid, you know, any age if you want to do something special. Then get out your old cassette recorder if you have one of those, if you're right. My generation. Or if you don't have
do
one of those.
Do they work? Who's even got one that works? Hello? Is this thing on?
That's right.
Come
that's
on.
Right. We still have people that bring in tapes, and I say, oh, you know, when's this from? They go, oh, we did it last week. So people are still using cassettes.
Okay.
You know, it's what you're comfortable with.
Sure.
And if you don't have that, almost everybody nowadays has a smartphone. You can just go and download an app, if you don't already have it, that turns your smartphone into basically a tape recorder.
Sure.
And just dictate into it. You can also go and get one of those little voice recorders. They usually call them audio hard drive recorders. And speaking of that, take this book that you purchased and just read it. Just read it to the kids, turn it into a CD, give them an SD card or whatever with the book, and then they can hear grandma or mom and dad or whomever reading, whether it's Green Eggs and Ham or a Fablehaven book, novel, poems, anything. And it's just so special and so unique, and it goes for generations and generations and generations.
Well, that's true. It could get passed on down to your third great grandkids 200 years from now.
Oh, yeah. And they can see pictures of you. They can see movies. But you are actually reading a story, and they're going along and reading along with you. And it's great for kids that can't even read yet.
Wow.
Because it helps them learn how to read, ones that already can. It's a great tie between generations.
What a gift. And, you know, think about new parents, too. You know, somebody who's in their early 20s, mid-20s, and they're reading to their child. And then you can hear that the same recording generations on down the line. Unbelievable.
In fact, that's an awesome idea to do. Because, I mean, even if you're pregnant, how they say you need to talk to your baby, read them a story, and just put together a whole library of these stories. It's easy and inexpensive to do.
All right. Now, you said that is the third best gift that anyone can do for the holidays. What's the second best gift?
The second best gift is basically the same premise, except you're telling your story.
Ooh.
You're going in and telling them, you know, who your best friend was in high school, how you met your husband, other people that you met, or how you met your wife. Stories about your grandparents. For people that want to do this, the biggest stumbling block, and Ralph Gates talked about this a few weeks ago, about doing interviews, is what do I ask besides the basic? There's two books that I recommend, and there's many more out there. It's called The Book of Myself, a Do-It-Yourself Autobiography in 201 Questions, and it's written by Carl and David Marshall. And it's only like about $16. It's very inexpensive. The second book is The Book of Me, a Do-It-Yourself Memoir, by Nanette Stone, which is only $14.99. Pick them up at about any bookstore.
I have seen that. That's a little one, I think.
Oh, it is.
Right?
It's pretty small.
It's a tiny little book, and it's something you could store pretty much anywhere. And I haven't seen the 201 questions, but you've brought one, and perfect. And look at this. Let's just go through what some of them are. This was a particularly memorable vacation, reunion, or gathering, and you have a whole page to write about that. Some of the things I have loved doing with my family were this health problem or accident was very scary for my family. And you get a whole page for each question to answer something in there. Imagine a whole book, 201 questions and all these things you would write in it. What a gift.
You could be talking about hours, and so it's not like, oh, what am I going to ask? Start at the beginning of the book and record it. And like you mentioned, you can write in it too. But nowadays, what I would do is I would record all the stuff. Just read the questions and then answer the question. Read the next question, answer the question. There's very simple audio editing equipment if you want to go in and clean it up, or just do it raw and give it to your kids. I mean, I would give anything if I had my grandma or grandparents do this. And there's probably listeners out there thinking the same thing. Well, if your grandparents and parents are still around, go and do it at your Christmas party.
That's
get
right.
Them together.
There's only one grandparent that I have a voice recording of. And
wow.
What would you give to have the other three?
Exactly. You know? I'm going to do it for Christmas this year when we have our Christmas party. I've got some old letters that my grandparents wrote to each other and different special stories they wrote, and I can't get it in their voice because they're gone, but I still have my mom here. So I'm going to have her read it at second person, and it'll still be that special thing for me to hand on to my kids and my grandkids.
Okay, now, the number one thing that you think is the greatest gift for Christmas.
Well, the greatest gift is a really sacrifice. It's donating an organ.
What?
Yes. I'm totally serious.
No,
in fact, I saw a great story on the news the other night about that, about how people are not just
There's
doing it.
There's preservation.
Oh, yeah. Very preservation.
Yeah.
It was really a neat story about this one guy just felt this need to do that. And so he went, you know, called the number for the organ donation, said, hey, I've got two kidneys. They're both great. I'd like to donate one. And so they had him come in, did the match, found somebody that needed one. And this girl that got his kidney, so happy. She'd been on dialysis almost her entire life. And what greater gift than something like that?
All right, that's some amazing ideas. Kidneys, organs, really? Coming up next, we're going to talk about, are you stealing stuff? Copyright rules when it comes to digitized copies of various items, things you might want to copy for your family history. When are you breaking the rules? When are you not? Tom will give us some clarity. Coming up next on Extreme Genes. We are back. Final segment, Extreme Genes, Family History Radio. You know, this is something that I think worries a lot of people. I know it's worried me, you know, at various times as to when can I take something? When can I copy something? Or when am I breaking a copyright issue? And Tom, you got a little clarity on that.
Yeah, it's something that we have people call us about quite often. And some people are looking for excuses. Some people really want to know what the truth is. We have people that have come in that have made a compilation CD. And they were planning on making copies and hand out to everybody at their wedding. And we say, no, you can't do that. That's major copyright infringement. They go, well, they're songs that I purchased and I'm not charging anybody. I'm handing them out at my wedding. That's a major, major red
sure.
flag. That
right.
is absolutely copyright
Music.
Infringement.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. There's a place called the Harry Fox Agency. They're basically licensors for most music. And what they do is you send them, and these are the songs I'm looking for. by this artist. I want to make a compilation CD. I'm going to be handing them out on our wedding. And so then what they will do is they will get the permission from these artists, because they're all in their company, so to speak, and then they will give you permission to make 10 or 20 or 50 or whatever. And it could be $100, it could be $1,000, depending on what your songs are. But then that way, there's no issue with copyright.
All right. So music is probably the number one violation, I would think, for most anything, because you want to use a popular song behind a video or with a slideshow or montage of photographs. But you want to make sure you're good with that.
You know, the thing is, there's the letter of the law and there's also the spirit of the law. Most manufacturers are not going to get mad at you if you make a little montage that's used at your home. When you start making copies and passing them out, that's when you're going to get in trouble. Even though both of them are really illegal, the first one, they're not going to go after you, but they want to make the law totally to cover everything. So if somebody goes too far over the line, it's not like, I'm a little bit over the line. Well, no, you've totally broken copyright laws. And there have been people that have gone in and downloaded illegal music, and they have been sued by their record companies, sued for millions of dollars. And these kind of lawsuits, you can't take out bankruptcy and they go away. They stick with you forever. So these people are basically indentured to these record companies because they went and passed out music CDs to people.
Isn't that something? And they do it, of course, to make an example for the rest of the world, because
exactly,
their income, their livelihood has been stolen by millions of people. And it's a whole different model now for the music industry.
You know, and so many people, I hear the excuse, which they're just trying to make themselves feel better. They go, oh, well, they're rich. They've got all this money. They don't need that.
Yeah.
Well, what if somebody came in to your house and stole presents under your Christmas tree because you live up on the Upper East Side? Oh, well, they have plenty of money. They don't need all these presents. And it's the same kind of thing. It's like, you know, what if it happened to you? Let me give you an example. Let's say you go into Best Buy and you steal a CD. Okay, basically you're stealing from the stockholders at Best Buy and everyone else, you know, in line that gets paid. You're not stealing from them. You're only stealing from Best Buy. If you go and borrow a CD from somebody that they bought at Best Buy and then you make a copy of it, you're not only stealing from Best Buy or whoever you would have bought that from, you're stealing from the recording company, you're stealing from the artist, you're stealing from the musicians, you're stealing from the songwriter, the lyricist, the people that grow the trees that make the paper that go into the thing.
All that.
You're stealing
right
from
on
everybody.
Down the line. All right.
Exactly.
That's great advice. And just a reminder, by the way, if you put something on a video that you say post on YouTube that violates copyright, they're going to take that down.
Absolutely.
You're going to get flagged. They do not like that. And that's a great example. Good advice. And hopefully that'll help a lot of people as they're trying to make their decisions about what they're going to do and the right way to do it, the wrong way to do it.
You know, just keep yourself good. Be honest and fair in all your dealings with your fellow man, and you'll be set.
Thanks for listening to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel. Find out who you are at FamilySearch.org.